You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the Midside, where we don't need to pretend to believe anything to sell you a shirt with a cheesy slogan on it, and we won't charge you $60 for it. Yeah, I'm talking to you, AOC, because you totally listen to this podcast, AOC, JML. It's a match made in hell. I'm your host, Justin M. Lozeski, and we are chugging along to the end of the year here. After this episode, there are only two new episodes left in 2020, and one is the season end, the year-end award special. And if you want to contribute to that, all you have to do is go to themidside.com/awards. You can vote for the Peak Farce Audience Award. You know, there are only two stories for that, either the pandemic or the election, which was more farcical for the year. I think it's pretty obvious, but hey, it's a fan vote. It's not my vote. And then you can nominate for all the other categories, you know, the Tom Brady medal for greatness in the face of doubters, the Romantic Manifestation Award, the Zack Snyder Awesomeness Award. All of those awards you can nominate for, so do that at themidside.com/awards. Now I'm going to bring in my co-host, joining me this trip from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forgo his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Yeah, it's another day in paradise. We've canceled everything here in California. Everything. I hope that included global warming and AOC's overpriced shirt, but I'm not sure. But Justin, before we get into it, shouldn't we be raising our prices on themidside.com/store? I mean, if we can get $65 for a cheap hoodie, screen printed hoodie, I mean, think of the incredible value that we're providing.
Everyone's
with high quality merchandise.
I mean, our slogans are higher quality than AOC's. There's no doubt about that. Eat the rich. I mean, what, that's from like, what year is that from? That's going to be mid-1900s, right? Mid-20th century. She's not even original, right? It's derivative. But everyone's doing it nowadays. Everyone. I mean, any of these bands and everything, they all, and this is something I appreciate about like Newfound Glory and 4 Years Strong and why I buy their merch. They're not charging that much for that kind of stuff, right? They'll put a hoodie up. It's $30, maybe $40 at most. You know, they had a nice windbreaker that I bought recently. It'll double as a raincoat for me here in Florida. I was looking for a raincoat. I have been since I moved. So I bought that because that was something I needed. And it was like $50 maybe at most. But that's a windbreaker slash raincoat. Like, that's a good value for that kind of product. But all of these people do now. I mean, Kanye did it too. Did you see his merchandise for when he was running for president, how much he was charging for that? It was like $60 to $80 for a hoodie.
Man, oh man, the markup, man.
It's crazy.
Capitalism has failed, right? I mean, that's what that's the conclusion we're supposed to draw.
That's the absurd part about it. Like, capitalism has failed because you've conditioned everyone to buy from all of these brands, and you've made yourself a brand. Therefore, capitalism has failed. Or maybe it's just that you guys have intentionally created a dumb, as you would say, proletariat. Huh? Huh? And maybe that's why you can cancel everything. So why don't we get into all of it in Life on the Midside. Take a good look around. Does life really suck? Are we just complaining? I hope that this mic is on. Because I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense. I hope that you'll throw up your hands and sing it and tell all the haters that they should just shut up and smile. Yeah. As always, if you would like to support us, you can do so on Patreon or Locals. Patreon is per episode. Locals is per month. You can do so at themidside.com/Patreon or themidside.com/Locals. We thank you for anything and everything, including? Including affirmations. I was trying to say including and thought of affirmations, so I said occluding. That's a new word. Occluding affirmations.
It's close to occluding, right? Like,
yeah.
Shaving things away, but not quite. So we'll have to figure out what it means later in the episode.
Maybe that's what we learned this trip. All right, before we even get into all our weekly COVID update, I have a ridiculous story I need to tell you, William, of something that happened to me this week that is, oh my God. It's just, if anyone listens to the Adam Carolla show and every once in a while, or the Adam and Drew show and every once in a while, he reads emails he gets from people and it just interacting in a business setting. And he's like, what is going on? I got one of those emails this week. Okay. So on Friday and Saturday, they were all day wrestling tournaments. And so Friday, you know, I'm a teacher. So Friday I had to ask for a temporary duty exemption to go work with the team, right? To work with the girls team and the JV team. And along with that, I had to put in a request for a substitute teacher to come in and cover my classes. All pretty normal stuff, right? Other coaches do this all the time. You know, the head wrestling coach is the athletic director. So obviously I have him, you know, backing up that this is a legitimate thing. It wasn't a problem. And, you know, when I put in for the sub, I don't know how they do it. They must have to sign up on their end of the portal or whatever. But a sub pretty quickly accepted the job for the day. But then there's like no communication with the sub about like, hey, what are you teaching? What are your lesson plans and everything? To the point that I've learned that substitute teachers at this school are so incompetent that I basically give the class activities to do and I assign one or two kids in each class to basically be the teacher for the day. Was that your experience with teachers, with substitute teachers, William, in high school, that they were just terrible?
Yeah, they were probably better served, most of them, by actually just being babysitters, right? Like, if they had hired a babysitter instead of a substitute teacher. Like, for us, we had, there was one regular substitute teacher who, even to my eyes, like, in elementary school, felt like she was older than dirt. Like, she was out of the, like, one of those old black and white movies that we would watch. Like, she was just so old. Like, and she would fall asleep. So, yeah, substitute teachers can be a little bit iffy.
So I get an email. which shows exactly what you're saying, and I had those expectations. I get an email, the title is substitute. And I'm like, oh, okay, you know, this is interesting. Maybe, you know, maybe this person will actually, like, ask what's going on in my classes. I kid you not, this is what the email reads. Now, remember, this is someone subbing for English language arts classes, English classes. Hello, I am subbing for your class tomorrow and just wanted to know if you had a microwave. Thank you.
Well, all right.
That, William, if you were going to be a substitute teacher, would that be your number one priority? Would that be the thing you most wanted to know about?
Well, I mean, maybe she's planning on doing a cool science demonstration with a microwave.
An English class?
I'm stretching here. I don't know. Yeah, that seems. Wouldn't the teachers' lounge have a microwave? I'm so confused.
The multiple teachers' lounge. Yes. Well, that's the thing. That's the thing about this email, right? I am subbing for your class tomorrow. Just wanted to know if you had a microwave. Are you asking if I have a microwave in my classroom? Is that what you're asking? Are you asking if there's one at the school in the multiple teachers' lounges?
Or just hanging
also,
out at home? Right. Actually in your home?
Right. Well,
is
exactly
this flirting with
point.
You? Do you got a right. microwave, Mr. Rich Daddy?
Exactly correct. Oh, he's a teacher. He's not a substitute teacher. He must have a microwave.
A real microwave. Thing. What a day.
I just want to know if you had a microwave. So are you asking me if at some point in my life I had a microwave? Well, yes. I mean, I had one when I was in California. Do I have one now? I got this email and it blew my mind. It blew my mind. You could write an email and you could put that in there. Hi, I'm subbing for you tomorrow. And I was just wondering, you know, what are you covering in your classes? Could you give me a brief overview? You know, just tell me what the topic is and like a sentence on the activity you had planned. Also, I was concerned about my lunch. Are there microwaves in the school where I'll be able to heat food up? And then I would go, oh, okay, those are all reasonable questions. That makes sense to me. I will answer your questions. Do you want to know what I did with this email?
Other than read it on a podcast? No.
Right, other than read it on a podcast, yes.
I don't know. Did you reply at all? I would doubt that you even replied.
I ignored it. I completely ignored it. I was just like, nope, Don't care. Because you want to know the thing is, there are microwaves. But William, you want to know what I do? I meal prep for the week. I cook chicken breast. I put it in the refrigerator. I put it in little Tupperware containers. Guess what? I don't even heat it up. I leave my house at, I leave my apartment at 6:30 in the morning. I don't eat lunch till 11 o'clock. I eat lukewarm chicken every day because I don't even want to deal with going to the microwave to heat it up for a minute.
Well, maybe this substitute teacher was identifying your problem for you. This is the universe telling you you need a microwave in your classroom when even substitutes expect you to have a microwave.
So really, this teacher is absolutely brilliant, and I'm too stupid to understand it.
4D chess, baby.
The god is playing 4D chess. Was this god speaking to me directly?
Via email. I mean, I don't know if I'd call that direct.
What if the school is monitoring me, and I didn't even know it, and they've been watching my videos, the videos of my class on feed, and they're like, why is this guy eating cold chicken every day?
His productivity would go up 5% if only his classroom had a microwave. Well, hey, if we're going to spend billions of dollars for, I think Biden was talking about $100 billion or something in order to get kids back to work, or back to school, sorry, get the teachers back to work, it was going to take like $100 billion. I don't know if you saw all that. But
I didn't see that, but that's what I was going to say is, like, I wouldn't believe any of this, what we just said, but with what you're saying, man, and the government overreach recently, it's possible. What was the $100 billion about?
Basically, the teachers union's saying that they're, you know, we can't possibly teach the kids in this COVID world without, you know, having $100 billion spent on more teachers, more administrators.
Microwaves?
And I don't know if microwaves were included. I'll have to pull up the story.
But, I'm going to have to join the union just to get a free microwave in my classroom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, so this is a California teachers union?
No. This was Biden. This was nationwide. He wants the ventilation systems upgraded and partitions and smaller classrooms and more teachers. Mostly more teachers, right? If it's the teachers union pushing it.
More teachers. Where are we going to get these mythical teachers from?
I don't know. We'll send lots of emails broadcasting that there are microwaves.
I mean, I guess, look, I guess it's better. More emails. Come teach school. We have microwaves in every classroom. What if that was the tipping point? What if that was the tipping point for having more teachers? We don't need to give them raises. We need to give them microwaves in every classroom. No, I mean, I guess it's better than Garcetti, though, right? The mayor of L.A., like Joe Biden saying we're going to have more education, whereas Garcetti's saying cancel everything. This is crazy to me. He literally, William, literally came out and said it's time to cancel everything because COVID is so bad. We need to cancel everything. You know, we've talked on the show over and over again about how COVID's nowhere near in any. It's in like a different galaxy of bad versus good with what people are saying. So how do you, I want to know how you react to this as someone who lives in this area and is in the county that this guy has purview over.
Well, I'm waiting to see if there's going to be any difference. Cause at least right now there's not been a whole lot of difference. Things are taking effect. Well, technically they take effect today, but nothing gets enforced, quote unquote, until tomorrow. So we'll see what this new cancel everything plan is going to do. But judging just by the traffic and stuff, like, nothing's really changed. You know, traffic is probably about 75% normal right now. And you would expect it to be there's a little bump with people doing holiday shopping. Believe it or not, people are doing holiday shopping. And I think that's kind of the big thing that's happening right now is the politically connected industries have sort of lobbied their way into compliance so that they can do things, whereas some of the smaller businesses are having trouble. And
well, there was that video, right?
Yeah, there was a viral video of a poor restaurant person, like, spent all this money making this outdoor seating area, and she gets the order to shut down, and then right across from it, the movie production company set up a bunch of tents. And she's like, this over here is safe. And then 80 feet away, mine, unsafe. And it's just, it's it's pretty pretty powerful video. I don't think anyone's... I don't think that sways the politicians, though. Because, of course, the movie productions, they're essential. You know, your life is not essential.
Right, the movie that tells you your life is shit is essential.
Yeah,
but your life itself is not essential.
The question you should always ask is essential to whom, right? That's the part that they're blanking out constantly. It's like, wait, what is it? Like, that movie production company is essential to who? And then her restaurant is essential to who? Right, taking away people's ability to set their own hierarchy of values is pretty pretty disturbing.
It's just crazy to me. It's crazy to me that we're at the point that people in California are saying it's time to cancel everything, right? Especially because I'm over here, Disney World's open, right? I'm over here, and since DeSantis made his executive order, months ago, I think it was October, basically saying, you don't really have to wear a mask because there are no consequences beyond the whatever the short term are, right? You can't be fined, you can't be jailed, right? You can't be punished. Now, at my school, when I thought about it, I had that discussion on the show. If there's contact tracing and they find out I didn't wear a mask, they can tell me to go home for 2 weeks. Is that probably unconstitutional? Yes. And you probably could fight against that, especially with the executive order. But we know how long the legal process takes. And maybe in the long run, I could be paid restitutions for the time I missed or whatever, even though I would still be paid salaries. So I don't even know how that would work out. It might be a win for civil liberties. But in the short term, the damage that would be done, for instance, to all the people I was around after not wearing a mask, i.e. the entire wrestling team, in the short term, there's no way to get around that. So I think a lot of people are pragmatically wearing masks around here, whereas California, people have the shit scared out of them. And it's crazy to me that, which is the point of cancel everything, isn't the rhetoric, William, cancel everything, isn't that a small step away from kill yourself? And what I mean by that is, and I had this conversation in a Twitter thread, I said a long time ago, I said in college, I was like, based on the logic of the left, the only real way to save the world is to kill yourself, right? We see this with environmentalism, this idea that, oh, man is a harm to the environment. Well, then to save the environment, you have to eliminate the harm. And there was someone on Twitter saying the only way, to stop the virus is you have to stop the possible paths of transmission. So well, the only way to stop the possible paths of transmission is for there to be no humanity. And then they replied to me and they were like, New Zealand has no paths of transmission. And I immediately Googled it. And there were still 9 new cases of coronavirus in New Zealand on December 4th. So even then, the day the argument was happening on Twitter, it still existed. You cannot eliminate this virus. And now I don't want to get into the discussion of when did we go from flattening the curve to dismantling the virus. But that's the point we're at when we say cancel everything. Aren't we one step away, William, from saying kill yourself? The only way to stop this virus is you to kill yourself?
I think they're being consistent with their worldview, right? Their anti-human, anti-life worldview, for sure. In the chat, Trailer Takedown Dan said he fled to Texas on 1 day notice. So maybe I should look at fleeing. Is it too late, Justin? Will I not be able to flee? We're supposed to stay at our house, wear our masks everywhere. I was in Redondo Beach yesterday and helping a friend install some TVs in his new apartment. And just walking around the neighborhood after I parked the car, no one was wearing a mask. And this was the same place that when this all started, I think if you recall, I was talking about how I got Karen'd for not having my mask on when immediately getting out of the car and getting my dog out of the car, walking the dog at Redondo Beach, right? I was immediately Karen'd about putting my mask on. I was like, oh yeah, yep, will do as soon as I, secure the dog from running into the street.
The dog's life is not as important as flattening the curve.
I know, I could kill someone by breathing on them.
Yeah, I mean, I think there, like I said, I think there's a lot of pragmatism with the way people are approaching all of this, but that also creates an issue.
Oh man, and how many people were in this apartment? We were, adult beverages were being consumed as these TVs were being mounted. him, his roommate, his girlfriend, me, various other people that remain nameless for fear of their arrest by the popo.
Well, right. You've hit the thing I was just going to get to, and that's what it really is, right? Logistically, with everyone not following anything, it would be very difficult for them to really arrest everyone and suppress everyone. And it would get to the point of really like a military.
You don't think there's
state.
Enough Karens? There's not enough Karens?
Well, that's the question right now. That is the line. That is, you are 100% correct with that question, and that is the line they are walking right now. The line they are walking right now is because they are using the rhetoric of a military state, a police
William,
state.
My degree from FU says you are 100% correct.
Good use of that drop.
Thank you.
Yes, that is the correct question. Do they have the power to actually follow up the rhetoric they're using? Because the rhetoric they're using, it's time to cancel everything. That is terrifying rhetoric. Just like, remember, if you remember months ago, I ranted about Gavin Newsom's rhetoric about we're just going to follow the science and everything. It's terrifying. It's terrifying. They haven't followed through with it yet. Is that because there aren't enough Karens? Is that because they're afraid of the consequences if they actually tried to follow through with that? Or are they hoping that we just do it to ourselves? Now, as you pointed out, we haven't completely done it to ourselves, but there are plenty of people, which is the Karen question, right?
Yeah, maybe there's a sort of a second pressure here, right? Where they have to look like they're doing something, and they're not going to do, they can't do anything that's actually effective, right? So this is definitely looking like you're doing something. So otherwise, what would happen is the public would say, like, why are these people dying, right? If they're constantly doing something and keeping this very visible show going, right, that we know doesn't really affect anything, then at least they can point and say, well, look, I mean, all these people died, but, you know, look, we were doing things. Or even better, it's those damn people who protest that aren't protesting for Black Lives Matter that are spreading it, right? Because I don't know if you saw, but there was a nice article about saying we should stop these anti lockdown protests because they're super spreader events. And basically the way they were saying is like they're very specific about all the things, the behaviors that should stop, and they only mentioned the anti lockdown protests. Like, it wasn't protests in general that should be stopped.
Of course. Did you also see what Trailer Takedown Dan said in Discord? He said his girlfriend lives in San Francisco, so visiting her would have been illegal if they hadn't gone to Texas right now. Can you imagine that? That's insane. That's insane.
I'm pretty sure installing a TV was illegal yesterday, but I'm not sure if the police will be coming to my door. I think Colt will protect me. He's over here sleep barking right now. Storing up his
energy. And then the other insane thing, did you see the story? I think I said I shared it in the group thread where it was like contracting COVID-19 may possibly lead to erectile dysfunction.
Whoa. That's some conspiracy level shit right there.
They are Pfizer's. Just throwing anything at the wall and hoping it sticks to scare people at this point.
Please tell me it was contested or whatever. This election is contested or fact checked. This has not been fact checked or fact checkers deny this.
I'm scrolling through. I thought I put it in the chat. Did I put it in Discord or did I put it in? Oh yeah, here it is. Another reason, this was on an NBC site. Well, it's loading. NBCPhiladelphia.com, right? It says, another reason to wear a mask. COVID-19 may cause erectile dysfunction. And then it says, although COVID-19 treatments have improved and a vaccine is on the way, right? So the first half of this sentence, right? Oh, look at all these good things that are happening. You should be less scared. And there's an although in front of it and a comma, which means the second clause, the second phrase here is going to contradict the first. Even a mild case of the virus can cause long-term complications. All right. We know that already. You've scared the shit out of us with that already, right? Dash, including the possibility of erectile dysfunction. The possibility of. Not including erectile dysfunction. The possibility of. Isn't there with anything you get the possibility of it causing long-term erectile dysfunction if it affects blood flow and oxygen levels?
The only thing this story is missing is women and minorities hardest hit. I'm sure it's somewhere in there.
Well, right, because, you know, they're being denied
sex.
Access, yeah. Well, they're being denied access to erections. You can't put it that way. You have to say denied access.
Okay, yes. They're being denied access to erections. Thank you. Yeah, okay. You are apparently you're more steeped in this culture than I am, because that was a much better way of saying it.
I'm steeped in erection culture, Justin.
Well, I just figured being around gays... You know, social justice and erections going together seemed pretty normal.
It's a normal activity.
That seems normal like in the Venn diagram of gay culture, that's under the normal Friday night overlap.
Yep. Uh-oh, I gotta close the door. BRB. Sorry about that, the vacuum was invading. That would have been really noisy.
The Roomba?
Yeah.
All right. Well, there was something else, a couple other things I wanted to talk about this week that really sort of either entertained me or kind of bothered me a little bit. So the first thing that really entertained me was Spotify Wrapped came out. Do you know what Spotify Wrapped is, William?
Yeah, it's it shows you how much it's been spying on you all year and presents a nice report for you on the, you know, your listening habits.
So you say spying. Is it bad that at this point I don't care about the spying? Like, I think this is a good use of the spy. I think this is a brilliant marketing tool by Spotify.
Oh, I think it's brilliant. End, I think it's brilliant.
What you listen to the most.
But what do you think they're doing with this data other than giving it to you for free?
I mean, hopefully telling more pop punk bands they should get on Spotify so Justin will listen to them.
I hope.
They can sell it to Fearless Records and Hopeless Records and everything so that, you know, they can market to me more. Like, I don't, look, that would be a good use of this kind of thing, right? It's very targeted. I have a problem with, like, the very, like, general, generic, like, oh, we're going to find out where Justin is at all times and use that to, like, control him. I don't have a problem with being like, oh, okay, well, this guy's email address is linked to him always listening to pop punk bands. We're going to give his email address to Hopeless Records. First of all, they already have my email address. They already know who I am.
I think they have your home address, yeah.
Right. They got probably from the amount of merchandise I bought from them, right? They know where I've lived for the past decade and at least, right? So, I don't know. It doesn't bother me. I think it's a really cool, really cool marketing thing. And, like, you know, obviously it tells me Newfound Glory was my favorite band. It tells me how many hours I listened to them. I was in the 0.1%, top 0.1% listeners of them, which really confused me at first. Mathematically, William, that means, like, I listen to them, like, the most out of, like, most people on the planet, right?
Yeah. That listen to Spotify, yeah.
Right, on Spotify, clearly, right? I'm assuming they have fans outside of Spotify. Although I know Spotify is very big in the pop punk community, so who knows? But I think it's really cool, and I think it's a really good marketing idea to put it out there and have you share it on your Instagram stories and on Twitter and everything. I even saw somebody make a meme, like, it was like Apple users when Spotify Wrapped, Apple Music users when Spotify Wrapped comes out, and it showed them, like, somebody really sad and lonely. So, I think it's a good marketing technique. But what I thought was really cool was a tweet that came in because of it, where I've always imagined, like, it's got to be pretty gratifying when you're one of these bands and it says all the hours somebody listened to you at, and all these people are tweeting like, oh yeah, I listened to Newfound Glory, I listened to 4 Years Strong all year. That's got to be pretty gratifying, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think people get to see, like, such concrete, right? Like, you get to see when they know all your lyrics, right, at the show. But, you know, to see it show up on your Instagram must be pretty cool.
Right. Oh, actually, that even makes me wonder another thing. Like, do they know who's tweeting all this now? And then when they see them at the show singing along, they're like, yeah, that's that guy. But I always thought that would be pretty cool. And as you know, I made a joke earlier in the year that, you know, I put the podcast on Spotify. Because we talked about the whole Joe Rogan on Spotify thing. And people were actually tweeting at me about us being on their top podcast list.
Yeah.
And one person, Midsider Cody, we were his top podcast of the year. And get this, the two below us were the Don Watkins Show and the Yaron Brooks Show.
Oh, no. Well, I saw Don's going daily, so he might beat us out next year.
Euron's not daily?
Oh, well, I don't know.
It doesn't matter. The fact there was a list. How are we above Don Watkins and Euron Brooke?
Well, I don't know.
Is there that much rationality in the world?
Maybe. I'm excited.
It was pretty gratifying.
Thank you, listeners.
Yeah, thank you, listeners. Thank you, Cody, for making us your number one podcast of 2020. That's pretty exciting for me. I said a long time ago on the show, I don't remember what it was, but whenever, you know, bands were like, oh, we have the best fans, I was always like, yeah, that's just a cheesy thing they say. But then we started having fans and we started having like awesome fans, and I was like, wow, we really do have the best fans. I mean, it's crazy. Like, just when that happened, it was crazy. Hold on, I'm checking the chat here. You guys are writing paragraphs in the chat. How can I respond to you guys writing paragraphs in the chat? How? I can't respond. I can't read a paragraph while I'm listening to William and thinking at the same time. Sorry, guys. Be more gooder, Trailer Takedown Dan said. Okay, I'll be more gooder. I'm going to be more gooder for ranting about entitled fan culture. Or, no, perpetually dissatisfied fan culture. So, William, I got so mad this week, right? So, it just makes me so angry thinking about it. Have you ever noticed that there are fans who, no matter what a property does, they're dissatisfied with it?
Yeah, definitely noticed that. You've done something that I kind of like, but you should have done it the way I want.
Right. And this is the biggest in the pro wrestling community. And, you know, WWE, they've been around forever. They've been leading it. And the whole industry's been leading the industry. And the industry's been needing a competitor. Well, recently in the last year, like 2019, the last year or so, AEW was created. All Elite Wrestling. The son of the Jaguars owner is the president and CEO. You know, a bunch of independent wrestlers, plus Cody Rhodes, who, if anyone's familiar with Dusty Rhodes, who, you know, now deceased, one of the greatest pro wrestlers of all time, one of the greatest pro wrestling minds. There, he's one of the executive vice presidents. And on Wednesday, their shows air on Wednesday night. On Wednesday night, they had one of the best pro wrestling shows, and I'm going to say this, I've ever seen. It was amazing. The matches were good. They had a big comeback from Sting. He's never been part of their promotion. He showed up. And it was the way they did it was awesome. And then the main event, one of the guys won the belt off of a guy who hadn't lost in a year. He had never lost a singles match in AEW. He had had the belt for a year. The guy turned heel while doing it. And he turned heel with the help of an executive vice president from another wrestling promotion. And as the show went off the air, they asked what's going on. And the guy who helped him was like, you can find out Tuesday night on Impact Wrestling. And it just blew my mind because it's like, this is AEW and now they're doing a promotion with Impact Wrestling. And that's never really been done before on national TV, at least not in America. I know it's been done in some of the cross promotion, the Japanese brands. And the way it was executed, the performances, because, you know, this is, you know, scripted, quote unquote, fake, whatever you want to call it, was awesome. Their deliveries were awesome. Like, I watched the clip of the end of that last match a few times because it was so, like, it's like when you watch a movie over and over again because you're like, wow, this is really awesome. This delivery is fun. The announcers are awesome. The way the interview happened is great. The execution here is great. And I just left this, I left watching it, William, with this feeling of, wow, pro wrestling hasn't been this good in a long time, and I haven't been excited for it in a long time. And then I went and read what people were saying about it. I swear to God, I was the only one who was happy with it. I swear to God. I swear to God, it was like, do you remember back in the day when
Twitter was not pleased?
Well, not just Twitter. People I knew personally, I asked about it, and they were like, oh, yeah, it wasn't that good. All the news articles and everything, there are sites that do reviews where they grade all the segments. There was one site, Simon Miller from What Culture. He does videos of ups and downs, and he gave the entire episode ups, and he gave, you know, like golden ups and diamond ups. And I was just like, you know what? I now appreciate you much more, Simon Miller. I kind of thought you were annoying before, But now I know that you're doing this because you legitimately love it and you're not just doing it for clicks. And I appreciate that about you. But it reminded me of when Man of Steel came out. And every time I saw the movie, I was like, this is amazing. And then I saw the conversation about it. I was like, why does everyone hate this? And it's just crazy to me that so many people seem to be fans of something, but they're not really fans of it in the way Simon Miller is, right? Like, that's why I respect him now, because it's like he seems to just legitimately be a fan of pro wrestling. That's why he makes all these videos for What Culture. It's not spam. But so many people, they're just perpetually dissatisfied with it. It's crazy to me.
Yeah, I think some of it comes from like being in that critic mindset, right? And only searching for the bad. I mean, you and I cannot do that, right? I mean, most art that's put out, if we just approached only finding the bad things and discarding it, when we did, or just constantly focusing on that, like think how hard that would be, right? Like there would just literally be nothing. What will we do? Read The Fountainhead over and over again, right? Like, my desire to connect with good things in sci-fi means that I'll watch something that might not be perfect, right? But I can get a tremendous amount out of it. And this isn't like saying like turn off your rational brain, right? This is saying like some people get in that negative critic mindset, right? Where they just are nitpicking, right? Instead of enjoying the thing.
Yeah, 100%. And I think there's something to the fan identity where you think in order to be a fan, you have to be discerning. And the only way to prove you're discerning is to critique everything. You can't ever be like, oh man, I really enjoyed that, because then you come across like a simp almost.
Yeah.
Like a simp for the property. I think people have that perception. Which is crazy to me.
And I think it's like you said, it can be hard to tell when you're seeing people who are critiquing or criticizing something. You know, it's easy to just put people in, oh, that's a shill, or oh, that's just a hater, right? And but when you see this consistent behavior, right, where it's always negative, it's always nitpicking, it's always finding the bad things in the thing, there's no, like, how can that, like, how does that help, like, how does that add to your life? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. What's in it for you for being perpetually dissatisfied with something that you claim you love?
Right. And that was part of the conversation, I would say, about 5 years ago, where people would be like, you know, if you don't like something, stop watching it. And then people would be like, who are you to tell me to stop watching it? I really saw that with the fan culture around the Flash TV series and Green Arrow TV series, where every week people would talk about how bad the shows were. And then other people would be like, well, if you don't like it, stop watching it. And they're like, who are you to tell me to stop watching it? I have every right to watch it as you do. It's like, well, yes, you do, but why?
Yeah.
It's weird. It's weird how you can identify as a fan of something, but hate the thing you're supposedly a fan of. But I mean, I think this is related to like when we talk about labels like objectivism, right? Where it becomes raised up to a, I think that the term you've used before is puritanical, and it becomes puritanical because it's raised up to a godlike status where it can't be besmirched. It has to be protected at all costs.
Yeah.
Above the self. All right, I just wanted to rant about that a little bit. That was probably the least interesting of the four things we've talked about so far. But we have more to talk about, some art-type stuff in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. Focused on. You've already heard it in this episode. People are interacting with us via Discord as this episode is being recorded. What? That could be you. All you have to do is join our Discord channel. You can continue the conversation with us during the week. Just go to themidside.com or themidside.com/podcast. Click on any episode link, and there will be a link to within the episode write-up, the episode summary, there will be a link to join our Discord channel. Do that and get involved. We love it. It makes our life a lot better to network, to interact with other people who want to witness the farce. And we are not the most popular Objectivist Discord server. I always say that because I've seen this Twitter account popping up recently where his bio is like creator. The person's bio is, I assume it's a him. I have no idea. Whatever. Bio is creator of the most successful or most popular. I don't remember if it's successful or popular. Most popular Objectivist Discord server. Okay.
So they all have 13 people in their Discord?
Right. Which we actually have more than, not that they're all active at the same time, but whatever. I don't have a review this week. I didn't have time. As I said, there was I'm yawning right now, which should prove my point. There was an all-day wrestling thing on Friday, an all-day wrestling thing on Saturday. Then Clemson played on Saturday night, so I didn't have time to watch anything new to review it. I really haven't watched much in the way of TV at all this week, which is crazy. Which is crazy to think that that's what my life is now. But, you know, it's good. So, two things I want to talk about. There's going to be Trevor Takedown. We'll get that in a second. But there was major news this week as far as entertainment goes, as far as movies go. And I wanted to get William's thoughts on it.
Yeah.
So, HBO Max has come out and said that, well, what's more, Warner Brothers? All Warner Brothers movies will be released on HBO Max at the same time they're in theaters. They'll stay on HBO Max for a month. Then they'll finish their theatrical run. Then they will go back to HBO Max. This is crazy. This is crazy. And I don't mean like it's insane, like, oh, they're so stupid. I have no idea what's going to happen. I'm not going to try and predict what's going to happen. I think that's kind of fruitless. What will be, will be. There's a lot of people out there who like to speculate about this stuff and say like, oh, this is what's going to happen. This is what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen. I do know this is crazy, though. It's crazy because it could change things drastically. The idea that you can now watch The Matrix 4 at home the same day it comes out, that's nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're not going to predict, but I'm going to predict. This is the end of the Hollywood blockbuster, for sure. If you can't have a $100 million weekend, then this whole sort of slot machine game that Hollywood's been playing with movies just doesn't work anymore. You can't go $300 million into debt, $200 million of it being marketing for a blockbuster movie anymore, right? What you're going to see is more along the lines of TV show budgets. I mean, even Game of Thrones, as expensive as it was, for a TV show, it would have been way more expensive to make it as a theatrical sort of thing, right? I think this is probably the end of several large chains of movie theaters, and the rest of Hollywood will follow suit. I mean, I've already been following some of the media buzz, some of the rumor mill. All the studios are having emergency meetings right now deciding what to do about this, because this is part of this is the consequence of the streaming war, right? You know, I don't know what HBO was thinking when they made HBO Max and didn't just roll everyone from HBO Now and HBO Go into it, right? But now they're going to have fresh content, right? And that's something that all the other ones have been struggling with, right? With COVID. But now they're going to have fresh content, not just like fresh, like television content. They're going to have actual movies. And that's I think going to change things, and I think Disney's going to follow suit. I mean, Disney was already kind of waiting, right? They tried it with what was that crappy movie?
Mulan.
Well, that was the crappy movie, Mulan. They tried it with Mulan, but they tried it with a different movie. They just kids movie. They just went straight to Disney Plus. I think also, though, Justin, this might have a consequence for like actual content, because if you think about it, we've talked before about the big difference between television and movies is the sort of visual storytelling is kind of the stereotype for movies, And you get a lot of the talking back and forth, right? Talking about their feelings back and forth on the television side, right? Television tends to be more writer driven and movies tend to be more director driven, right? I think that the quality, though, we've seen shift more towards the television side, right? We've seen more quality shows, especially on the writing side, coming from the television side. So I think in the long term, this is part of that larger seismic shift. And this may mean we get better content because instead of pulling a slot machine, right, and putting $300 million into, something like, Transformers 37 or something, right? We might actually get, the audiences are going to be more discerning. They're going to be smaller in the sense of more, not really niche, but you know what I mean? It's not just broad mass appeal, right? You're not just going for, will this fill all the theaters in China so I can get my money back, right?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I was with you until like the last bit. I don't like, that's where I'm not going to speculate. Like, I have no idea if it's going to turn out better content or not. Like, I understand all your logic and it all makes sense as far as the blockbusters and the slot machine and how everything goes. But then are we going to lose the directors because we're going more towards the writing side and the television side? I don't know. That's the stuff I don't know. To me, there's a more interesting question here. There's a more interesting question than about, what happens to the content and everything. Because I don't believe this is the final form. As you said, and I think the best thing that you said out of everything you said is this is just the logical extension. COVID may have spread this up, right?
Sped this up? I think both apply. Okay.
Both, right. Yes, both apply. It may have spread this up. It may have sped this up. But this was always coming with the streaming wars. This was always coming with the development of technology, with getting more people subscribed. Now, there is an interesting question that is implied based upon what you said is, in a year when they're no longer making The Matrix 4, when they're making smaller budget stuff, will people still want to, say, subscribe to HBO Max? With Netflix, they're already investing a boatload of money. I mean, we're talking tens of billions of dollars. How much more is HBO going to have to invest in order to stay above that? Because they're going to not want to tarnish that image, right? They're not going to want to tarnish that brand of, oh, you come here for the cinematic HBO Max, it's not Netflix. And then are they going to get a return on investment for that? So that's interesting, and I don't know the answer to those questions. But to me, from my perspective, I think they're trying something here. When I say this is just the first stage, I think they're trying to see how much people value the theatrical experience. And if they're releasing it in theaters at the same time they're releasing it on HBO Max, and then they're taking it off HBO Max after a month, they're trying to see if people will pay to see movies they already like in theaters. So perhaps the model shifts eventually to it's released online first as a marketing technique for theaters. And then if people really like them, they'll go and see them. Because it used to be that you went to theaters and you went because that was the only place you could see it. But what if you went just for the experience? And that's the question for me. My question is the theater experience in itself valuable? Is that worth preserving? For me personally, even if it's on HBO Max, I will still keep my subscription to, well, actually, I just thought of something else I hadn't even thought of. So I will still keep my A-list subscription, $23 a month AMC. I can see up to 3 movies a week. I'll still keep that. Because to me, I'd rather go and have that night out and have it be an event and have it be a social experience and have it be a giant screen. There's something different about leaving your house to go and do something and being around other people who may share your values, who have interest in this same thing. I think
this
that
just
is
in, all that's canceled. All of it's canceled.
Well, yes, in LA it is, right? But that's the question. Is it worth preserving going forward? Because here's the other thing I just thought of. Let's say everybody shifts to this, right? NBC does it with Peacock. Disney does it with Disney+. Am I going to want to do that? Are we back to the old problem people said? Streaming services were supposed to replace cable, but if we're paying for all these different cable services, aren't we just paying the same amount? Do I want to pay $100 a month, or do I want to just go to the theater, see the movies I want to see, and then buy the ones I want to see again on Blu-ray? Yeah. Do you see how the old model could still be the better one? Yeah. Why do I want to pay $10 a month to all of these different brands for access to their entire library of most things I'm not going to watch, where I could instead go to the theater, enjoy myself, and if I like it, get it on Blu-ray or get it on home physical media, whatever it's going to be, 4K, whatever it'll be then. So I don't think this is over yet. And I think the question just has to be, what is the more valuable experience for our life? And we'll find out what people value more. All right, you want to do trailer takedown now, William?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, there was silence, so I wasn't sure if I lost you for a second. So as
trailer
always, I post
takedown.
There you go.
All right,
it's frozen there for a second. That's what I was trying to do.
Oh, okay. Well, as always, I post the trailer takedown preview on Saturdays on the website. You can watch it before the episode, after the episode, or you can intersplice them. You can pause the episode, listen to it, or watch a trailer, pause an episode, watch the trailer, listen to us, so on and so forth. Hit the first trailer sound effect.
First trailer.
The Marksman stars Liam Neeson as a farmer living on the border between, I believe it's Texas and Mexico. And as he's there, he lives by himself and he's having trouble with the farm and blah, blah, blah. It's sort of like an Old West premise. And as he's by the border one day, as he's there, this mother and child come through that are being chased by the cartel, and he promises to protect the mother and everything. And look, I looked through Trailer Takedown, and I don't believe we've talked about this one before, and William can tell me if we've talked about this one before. And I don't particularly care. I'm going to give it the same review I would otherwise. But I think I have a sense of familiarity with this because I either A, considered to put this on before and didn't because it's like every Liam Neeson movie. I mean, if you remember my review of Honest Thief, he's become the modern day Steven Seagal where they slightly change the premise and just do the same movie again. And you know what? I love Steven Seagal movies. I have a boatload of them on DVD. I'm going to enjoy this movie and I'm going to see it. Hug.
This is White Knight the movie. I don't know. I know it's just all set pieces so we can shoot guns and kill bad guys. So maybe I can get past it. But I don't know. This one seems a little bit stretched. A little bit on the nose with the premise. Like, we know that everyone's going to be corrupt, and I don't know. Can I just watch Taken again, Justin? Tackle.
Yeah, you could watch Taken again, but you could just watch Under Siege again if you wanted to see every Steven Seagal movie, because it was just a remake of every Steven Seagal movie. And Under Siege in itself was a remake of Die Hard. It was just a version of that. And you could just argue that this is a version of Die Hard, right? But yeah. I like it. I'll continue to watch these kind of movies. It's sort of like people who enjoy watching Hallmark movies or Lifetime movies. I'll watch Steven Seagal movies. I'll watch Liam Neeson movies. I'm comfortable with that. I am comfortable with my moviality.
Second trailer.
Sylvie's Love, I think it's Sylvie's, I'm not sure. I think that's how you say that, is a period piece set in the 60s in New York City starring Tessa Thompson. And in it, this woman falls in love with this guy, but it's the wrong time. And then they meet later in life. No, this isn't a time travel movie. This would be more interesting if it was a time travel movie. I meant they meet again later in life. I didn't see anything visually interesting about this trailer. Granted, it's only a minute long. The performances weren't bad. I could see there being a market for this kind of movie. I also, when I read the premise, I think she, when she falls in love with this guy, is actually already in a relationship or married to like a soldier who's off at war or something, and they don't have that in the trailer at all, so that like complicates things in a way that makes things morally kind of gross. So on top of it being uninteresting, when I read about the premise, that makes me not want to I just don't want to see this. Although there are people who this would probably appeal to. So I don't want to take anything away from them. I don't think it would look bad for them. But for me, this is a tackle.
Tackle.
So it was interesting. You said there wasn't a lot of visually interesting going on. I agree with you. The setting kind of felt interesting to me, but there was no real, your added context didn't even kind of move the needle either. Even just watching the preview, it just seemed like a sort of a very pulpy romance movie. And it's just not something I'd be interested in. So going two in a row with the
tackle. Third trailer.
Uh-oh, before I say the name of the trailer, William with two tackles. Is he going to go for the the sweep?
Dangerously close.
Especially with this next one. Erwig and the Witch is... And William, can you tell me how to pronounce the studio's name? Studio Ghibli? How do you say it?
Yeah, Studio Ghibli is how most people will say it.
Right, and they're a famous Japanese anime studio who's made...
Mononoke
very
Hime
successful,
and,
Princess Mononoke, and what was the other one? Spirited Away?
Spirited Away, yep.
Yeah, very, very successful animated features, which, I mean, those were both nominated for Academy Awards, were they not?
Yeah, they were.
Yeah, so this is their next one. So I'm not going to comment on, like, the fact that it's a Japanese movie, because obviously it's a Japanese movie, that doesn't matter. I had a good idea of the story just from, you know, not without even the language barrier. With the language barrier, I had a good idea of the story. You know, this Erwig and the Witch, this young girl, I guess, is forced to live with these people who are like evil witches and magicians, or what's a warlock would probably be the word, would be proper, the proper word. I don't know. I don't know what they're using within their mythology. The character design of the male magic guy who's evil is, like, awesome. I will say that. Like, I was like, wow, that is... I like the way they made that look. The whole thing, though, William, looks like a Telltale game to me. And I mean the brand, Telltale. They've done, like... they did the Walking Dead games. They've done a Batman game, I believe. They've done a bunch of different properties. That's what it looked like to me. This animation was not interesting to me at all. It didn't appeal to me at all. The story was fine, but... Why would I just not watch Harry Potter again or any other sort of stories with a similar sort of conflict or approach to it? I just, factoring in the animation, this just didn't look good to me. Tackle.
Yeah, you're going too light on it. The animation in this is terrible. I don't get it. Maybe it's just the style I don't like, but... They seem like China dolls, right? Like it's like watching a Toy Story movie from the first Toy Story movie. The difference between the first and the second, you know how stark it was. You don't even remember how much you sort of forgave the first Toy Story movie because the technology was just so novel. This just looks rushed and very plastic, and maybe that fits the style of the story. I don't know. But it just is not appealing. And that's unfortunate because this is normally something that I'd be really interested in. But just judging by this trailer, unfortunately, for three in a row.
Tackle. Final trailer.
We Could Be Heroes is a Netflix original written and directed by Robert Rodriguez. And William, if you tackle this, I seriously question your sanity. Now, this doesn't look like a kid's movie, and apparently it's a sequel to the movie Sharkboy, The Adventures of Sharkboy and Lava Girl, which I never saw. Although now I want to go back and watch that in the entire Spy Kids franchise, because this looks awesome. In this movie, all the heroes in the world, the superheroes called Heroics, are defeated and captured by aliens. So it's like the most epic alien abduction ever. I don't know why they're capturing them. Maybe they're trying to study them. Whatever. But it doesn't matter. But then in it, the kids are all put on lockdown. The government takes them and is like, no, you have to stay in this bunker underground. And then what do the kids do? Because they're the kids of superheroes, of Heroics, they use their powers and they break out and they're going to save their parents. And it's called We Can Be Heroes. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Robert Rodriguez, I think we don't appreciate enough on this show. I think when he does something like this, this reminds me of how stoked I was when I saw Machete. I was like, yeah, this is awesome. This is a super romantic movie. This sounds great. I don't care if it's pulpy. I don't care if it's intended for kids. The last thing I have to say about it is the Heroic logo, which it kind of looks like the Heroics might be a government institution. I don't know. I'm going to have to watch the movie to see that. But the Heroic logo looks like the Hopeless Records logo. So. Hug.
Hug?
Exactly.
I was waiting for it. Yeah, so this is definitely for kids, but it looks like it is fun and may have some good themes. I like the child actors don't seem too terrible. That's always the danger, right? When you get something like from the vein of Spy Kids, you worry about the kids acting being pretty terrible. But this looks like it is a little bit self-aware and going to have fun with it, but actually has a story to tell. I think I could Netflix and chill on this one. So I'm going to Netflix and hug it.
Netflix and hug.
I mean, literally Netflix and hug. All right, exactly. William, that brings an end to this episode. What did we learn this trip?
I learned that you, in fact, do not have a microwave in your classroom. Justin, what did you learn this week?
I learned that apparently I need a microwave in my classroom. So subscribe to us on Patreon and Locals so I can get a microwave in my classroom because God is telling me to. As always, I want to thank you all for listening. This show would not be possible. No, it would be possible. I would just be sitting here talking into a microphone. So this show would not be as gratifying without you all listening. So thank you for listening. Thank you to the people who stopped by Discord and were listening live. That was awesome. We also learned that apparently some GIFs don't work in our Discord channel. Somebody tried to post one and it didn't work. So I don't know, William. I don't know what the deal is with that. Thanks to our Liberty.me listeners. I think we went pretty libertarian with this episode. So as you can see, I'm pretty sympathetic with you guys. So always appreciate having you on. If you want to buy a non-$60 t-shirt with a non-cheesy or less offensive cheesy slogan on it, you can do so at themidside.com/store. As always, you can support us on Patreon or Locals. Patreon is per episode or per piece of content. We sometimes do. It's been tough right now, but we do Patreon-exclusive reviews. So we'll try and get back into those next year. Patreon or themidside.com/Patreon, themidside.com/Locals. That is how you help us keep the lights on. Although the most important thing you can do, the best thing you can do is you can tell a friend. Tell a friend about the show because that's how we grow the community and how we make this show the number one podcast for Midsider Cody over the Don Watkins Show and the Yaron Brooks Show. We do that by telling a friend. So let's keep that going. Let's make more people have Welcome to the Midside as the number one podcast over the Don Watkins Show and over the Yaron Brooks Show. This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Amosneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a microwave.
All right, that was an awesome tag you did at the end there. I may one day have to actually get a microwave and put it in my classroom and then take a picture of it for social media.
No one will get it. It'll be such an obscure reference.
That's okay. Perfect. That's what we deal with here in the Midside. What would the Midside be without obscure references? Probably popular.
I'll lead an effective strategy to mobilize true international effort to pressure